The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Glenn Beck.
Was the Obama administration the toughest administration on terrorism? That's the line the left and the media has wanted us to swallow. You know, forget about supporting the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, the founders of modern day jihadism. And also, let's forget about giving the world's leading state sponsor of terror, Iran, $400 million in cash on a pallet at the Tehran airport. Let's forget about those little hiccups, because after all, he killed bin Laden. I think he did it with his own hands. Here's the president, President Obama, back in 2011 on the state of Al-Qaeda. Listen.
By the time we found bin Laden, Al-Qaeda's agenda had come to be seen by the vast majority of the region as a dead end. And the people of the Middle East and North Africa had taken their future into their own hands.
The people of Africa. So let me just make sure I have this right. In other words, their leader was dead and the movement was dying. So let's accept that is true. Mr. President, if that was true, if you had them on the ropes and this was all but a one battle, why was your administration giving money to Al-Qaeda's global finance network? This is a story that is a little underreported on the left and the mainstream media. The story goes back 14 years. The U.S. Treasury Department had caught a group called the Islamic Relief Agency red-handed. They were raising funds in support of jihadists. They had branches all over the world, including the Middle East and Africa, Western Europe, and even here in the United States. They were responsible for channeling over $1.2 million to Iraqi insurgents fighting U.S. soldiers in Iraq. They were also found guilty, of raising more than $5 million for Osama bin Laden. The Islamic Relief Agency was designated as a terror financing organization. Now, you'd think that story would stop after that, right? But it doesn't. 10 years after they were designated as terror financiers, the Obama administration approved a $200,000 grant for them to do work in Africa. An NGO had contracted them to do work in Sudan. When the NGO mentioned that this contracted group might be on the terror list, the Obama administration then paused the deal. Now, here's where it gets weird. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt for a second. It's possible somebody within the Obama administration screwed up, you know, the application process and just didn't check to see if this group was on the terror list. That's incredibly dangerous and incompetent, but at least it's understandable. But here's what I can't understand. At this point, everyone involved knows about the Islamic Relief Agency and what they're involved in. They know that they have given money to Osama bin Laden. They know they're on the terrorist list. But knowing all of that, they still agreed to pay them $125,000. That's over $100,000 of your tax money that was given to known terrorists. How did this happen? Well, that was our question over the weekend. There's one U.S. government agency at the center of all of this. And boy, do they have a strange knack for being directly in the middle of some of the darkest and most secret things our government is involved in. It's disgraceful, it's disgusting, it's dangerous, and it's still going on. See who I'm talking about tonight on TV on TheBlaze.com.
It's Monday, July 30th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Good morning, Stu. How are you?
Fine, Glenn. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, that's what I do.
I'm always amazed by when you say something like $150,000 went to a known terrorist group. I always like to think about that as, for most people, that's like more tax dollars than they'll ever contribute. Like, so you will go through your entire life paying taxes And maybe, you know, it's a couple hundred thousand dollars for your entire life. All your work, your entire life, all the money you ever gave to the government just went to a terrorist group. Congratulations, you win.
We are so screwed up. There's a story out of Texas today where they are now talking about renaming the city of Austin. They have already renamed seven streets that they deemed worthy of immediate action. And they now want to rename the city of Austin. Now, Stephen F. Austin is known here in Texas as the father of Texas. He is the namesake of Austin. He's the guy who carved out the early outlines of Texas. He's also the guy who opposed an attempt by Mexico to ban slavery in a province called Tejas. So he said if the slaves were free, they would turn into vagabonds, a nuisance, and a menace. So we've got to change the name of Austin now. This is what the city of Austin is doing. They are just rewriting history. They're just erasing. How do you do that? How do you do that? Who is oppressed by the name Austin? It's a progressive utopia. It is becoming the San Francisco of Texas. Thank you, California. And now they're claiming that in this progressive utopia, they're so oppressed. How? You took over the city. How are you oppressed? And so now they have to change our history. Over the weekend, I was recording the audiobook for the new book that's coming out September 18th. It's called Addicted to Outrage. And I read this story, and I had just read this section of the book, and I want to read it to you. As we search for truth, let's first remember who we are. America's history with slavery is an abomination. Frankly, the people back then were monstrous. I mean, how could they not be? It may not have, you know, been in their home or even their neighborhood, but they knew slavery was going on. The food they ate, the clothes they wore, the fabric, cotton was picked and made by slaves. They may not have been able to hear the lash and the crack of the whip, but all they had to do was think about it. But they refused. We should now, in this century, judge and condemn them. And it's important to do so, to set ourselves apart and signal our virtue. Because just as this generation has passed judgment on past generations, we too shall be judged and condemned by our children and our children's children. They will ask, how could they have possibly cared about some entertainer who tweeted stupid stuff, or spend days going back and forth online asking, do you see a blue dress or is it a gold dress? They knew that the food that they ate and the clothes that they wore were picked and made by slaves. Or is it somehow different now? Judge the founders, and we too shall be judged. Why are we not today leading the charge to free the slaves that are currently in chains? There are more in bondage today than the entire 400-year period of Western slave trade combined. What people now say about the founders is just as true about us today. We may not be able to hear the lash and the crack of the whip, but all we have to do is Google it. Hashtag slavery is out of control. Hashtags don't count as actually doing something. I can see my ratings now minute to minute. This is something new. And I know that every time I speak about freeing slaves in today's world, my ratings go down. I have shared the stories of the way radicals now fund their diabolical plans in organ harvesting. We have taken two cells off the streets when we kicked in the doors of their surgery centers in the Middle East. These are Christian Yazidi slaves and even Muslim orphans who have more value as parts than people. But people in radio and television and online beg me not to talk about it. Now, let's be really careful of asking the honest question here, because once you hear the answer, you're going to be faced with the choice. The question is, why? Why don't people want to hear it? Answer, because all of those who have been oppressed by a statue are selfish, self-centered crybabies and cowards. And quite frankly, the rest of us are too comfortable in the belief that by expressing our outrage toward those crybabies, we're doing our part. The choice is dogpile with outrage over my answer and do nothing, or do your own homework and find the truth for yourself. And instead of focusing on the crybabies, maybe we work together and lead and stop slavery today. The full book comes out September 18th. It's really good, if I may say so myself, as I'm reading it out loud over the last 35 hours. It's very clarifying, very, very clarifying, and backs up with history and science what's happening to us today and where we need to go. It's called Addicted to Outrage, and it's available now at Amazon. Also you can pre-order on Audible. Once again, sensitive personal data has been exposed in more data breaches for nearly 2 months. An authorized party reportedly used stolen usernames and passwords to log into online accounts of certain major department store websites. Customer data such as full names, addresses, phone numbers, email addresses, birthdays, payment credit cards, and expiration dates have all been compromised now. With your personal information from a data breach, criminals can open accounts, they can file tax returns, they can buy property, and so much more. It is, in a connected world, really easy to destroy your life really quickly. That's why the new LifeLock Identity Theft Protection is adding the power of Norton Security to help protect you against the threats to your identity and your devices that you can't easily see or fix on your own. Now, nobody can stop all cyber threats or prevent all my identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. But the new LifeLock with Norton Security is able to uncover the threats that you might otherwise miss. So go to LifeLock.com, LifeLock.com, or call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use the promo code BACK. You get an extra 10% off your first year if you use the promo code BACK at LifeLock.com, LifeLock.com, or 1-800-LIFELOCK. That's 1-800-LIFELOCK, promo code BACK, and get an extra 10% off. So what the media is not discussing, and it is the fuel that feeds Donald Trump, and the reason why I believe that this next 2020, the election of 2020, will not be a referendum on Donald Trump. It'll be a referendum on who runs against Donald Trump. The thing that nobody is paying attention to is the two states. There's two Americas now. And it is the America of, I don't even want to say traditional values, because that isn't even it. The America that understands, generally speaking, the Bill of Rights and says, look, we can all get along and let's just work this out. And maybe I want bigger government or smaller government than you, but generally we're okay. The other America is now quickly becoming the Democratic version of America, where it is hostile to different thought, where it is it claims that everything about America is racist, that the hierarchy must be taken down, that men have no power other than to rape women. This is the choice. The choice of 170 different genders or two, and I can live next to somebody who's, you know, wearing a skirt, and I just don't have to like it, and I don't have to say anything, and I don't have to, you know, applaud every time. I'd say, oh my gosh, Bert, that is the most lovely blouse I have ever seen. We don't have to say that, but I don't have to hate him either.
You do have to say Caitlyn Jenner is beautiful, though, right?
In both Americas, you have to say, yeah, no matter how,
I'm sorry, what are you about to say?
How good
okay.
she looks in a swimsuit.
Okay.
We have to make sure we say it.
That's sec. Why are you objectifying her?
Hmm?
Why are you objectifying Caitlyn?
Unbelievable. I don't have an answer. I don't have a good answer. Okay, so this is the problem. The problem is that America, the Democrats are fully in on postmodernism, which means anything that is remotely involved with the building of the Western culture is bad. Because it's why mathematics. Have you heard that mathematics are racist? You've heard that, right?
Math is racist?
You haven't? No, seriously. We've talked about it a couple of times. There are serious people now that are saying that mathematics are racist.
I've heard this, you know, when it applies to like the SATs, for example, mm-hmm. where like certain cultural things might not be understood. But how is math racist?
Oh, boy. Okay, so I'm surprised you didn't hear this or remember that we've talked about this.
Probably
not. There's serious people now claiming that math is racist. And I've never understood it until I began to look into postmodernism. Now I get it. I absolutely get it.
Because to me, I would think it's self-evident that serious people are not saying math is racist. Because if you're saying math is racist, you're not a serious person. So it's impossible for a serious person to say math is racist. They're numbers.
Yeah, right. Well, serious people are saying math is racist. And here's why. Math is racist because it is math, science, reason that built the Western way of life, that built the Western world. So anything that helped build this world needs to be taken apart. Now, it may be resurrected later, but anything that helped build the Western way of life must be stopped and taken apart, because it has to be collapsed. And then it can be resurrected under a new name or a new regime or whatever. But everything that helps keep this together or helped build it has to be taken apart. That's how you get to a place where mathematics is racist. And we have to not roll our eyes at that, because there are serious people. Now, like Stu says, I don't think you're serious.
Right.
But they do. They are.
And people are taking them seriously.
And they are in serious positions of education. And so when you have the halls of education saying, no, math is racist, it will become a fact to a lot of kids. And these kids are being indoctrinated with this garbage right now. I don't know what it's going to take before we start saying, I'm not sending my kids to any of these schools. I'm not doing it. I am not doing it. My kids would be better off at a trade school. My kids would be better off without a degree and just starting to, I mean, unless they're don't want to be a doctor. But I'm not sending my children through these indoctrination camps. because that is exactly what's happening in these universities. Back in a minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
This is dangerous. Let me give you an example of postmodernism in action, but you don't think of it this way. You think of it as supporting your president or supporting your party, but it is actually postmodernism. The new poll out, $12 billion to aid farmers that have been hurt by the tariffs. Now, what is that story? The story of the aid is a bailout for a big group of people because of a tax increase. Now, Americans who are conservative should be against the big tax increase and the tariff, same thing, which caused the hurt to the farmers. We should recognize that and then say, wait, we don't want to bail them out. That's doubling down on a bad idea. We don't want bailouts. So the government screws it up. The government bails it out. Who does that sound like? That's Democrats. Right. That's a progressive idea, right? The taxes. And then because of the damage that the taxes do, you have to bail somebody out. Mm-hmm. Okay. That is the Democratic Party. $12 billion aid to farmer hurt by tariffs. Are you for or against it? In favor, 78% of Republicans, against 22% of Republicans. In favor, 34% of Democrats, oppose 66% of Democrats. Wait. Can anybody be honest? Can anyone be honest?
And I think my initial reaction to that was people are just supporting their team, right? Like the Republicans, you know, they know that Trump's doing this. So even though they might not necessarily like the policy idea, it's less important than supporting their guy. And the same thing from the Democrats, even though they obviously love the idea of a bailout to support a tax increase. And it's like Democrat 101. But it's Trump doing it. So here they just say they don't like it because they don't like Trump.
So this is, in a way, postmodernism in action, because the Democrats should love this. Republicans should hate it. But Democrats should love it. They should love it. They don't. Why? Because it is Donald Trump. Anything to destroy Donald Trump. Why do the Republicans support this? Because it is Donald Trump, and he's destroying the mainstream media. He's destroying the old guard. So it is destruction that is making us, not reason, destruction that is making us go here. Now, we can say that it is about my loyalty, but it really is about destruction. You're loyal to him because you see him kicking down the doors of power, correct? And they are opposed to him because they see him, to be honest, they see him as a jingoistic, rah-rah America, let's make America great again. That goes against everything postmodernism is. So they have to abandon reason. The hardest thing about postmodernism, and the thing that we have to understand, otherwise we're never going to be able to even fight it. It's the same as progressivism. Until you could say, no, there is a difference between a liberal and a progressive. Until we understood that difference, it wasn't just word games. It was vitally important to understand and expose it. The same thing with postmodernism. Postmodernism. What is the modern age? The modern age is the age that was developed under science, math, reason, study, honest questioning, fix reason firmly in her seat, That's what created the modern world. There was no magic anymore. You had to prove it scientifically. So we get to Karl Marx. And Karl Marx, what is his theory? Stu, what's his theory? That all of the workers are going to eventually what?
Unite. Workers of the world will unite and they will come together to overthrow the evil fat cats.
Yes, they're going to overthrow capitalism and anybody who has anything, and they're all going to share. Okay. Well, A, we know human nature well enough to know that in the end, nobody shares. Nobody shares. If you have absolute power, you are not going to share that power, and you're not going to share your stuff, because you'll end up saying, you know, me and the rest of these guys, we're the ones doing all the work. We deserve it. And they isolate themselves, and it ends up in Venezuela. Okay. So at the turn of the century, and starting in the 1850s, people believed that the workers would rise up. And they did. That's what unions were for. And unions were, at the beginning, communist organs. That's all they were. They were trying to unite all of the workers to rise up against the evil robber barons, whether they were robber barons or not. So the unions start. Progressivism starts. Because progressivism says, now this is before all the hundreds of millions of dead. Progressivism says communism is the way to go. This one big state, and will unite the world. And that's really the way to go. But we don't like the revolution part. That's very un-American. Remember, you can assign some good intent here from the progressives, because they didn't know at the time what how it would turn out. So they say a big state and some sort of authoritarian plan is much better. And we can do it now because science is ruling. Reason, logic. So they don't, they see the revolution in Russia. They don't like the revolution in Russia, but they think that Stalin is the guy. Then Mussolini steps up to the plate, and Mussolini doesn't have a revolution. Mussolini, he takes over the state. Yes, he has some beatings in the streets with his black shirts and everything else, but it is not like the Russian Revolution. And he comes in and he takes power. Now, FDR sends his best people over to study Mussolini. FDR writes a review of the Mussolini's book on fascism and says it's great. This is the future. So all of this is happening, and then fascism falls apart. And what fascism was communism says workers of the world. But Mussolini figured out, because it was right after World War One. Wait a minute. All the soldiers here, they didn't fight for all of the countries of the world. They fought for Italy. So we're going to take this communist idea and just make it a nationalist idea, because that is a better way to get everybody into a one totalitarian state. So they were both socialists and both for complete control, state run. Well, about 1940, 45, it's all falling apart. By 1950, all of the communists see what's happening. The people in Europe have just fought against Russia and fought against fascism. And in America, we're starting to be very, very prosperous. We're exploding. And people are starting to have TVs and phones and houses and cars and two cars. And they realize these SOBs are not going to rise up. They're not going to rise up. They want the creature comforts. And somebody says, they don't know that they've been hypnotized. Oh my gosh, this system is so evil. They're just being bought. And they don't know that they're even in slavery, and they have no idea that they are oppressed. Ding, 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 ding. The first bells of postmodernism. How do we take the West apart? How do we tell people in the West that they're all really oppressed? What they have to do is they have to start splitting us into little teeny groups. Like fascism learned, it's nationalism. But if you split it down even into smaller groups, you can divide even a country. And so we have to split everybody into their own oppressed groups. Even those groups that don't think they're oppressed, they're in an oppressed group. And we can split them all apart. But then to do this, we must discredit the entire system. We have to tear it all down because there's no way you can build anything off of the back of this system. It must be entirely new. So we have to split everybody apart. We have to show how they're oppressed. Then we need to discredit every system. We need to have riots in the streets, chaos in the streets, with no one having any idea of what is true, what is not true. And then when it burns itself down to the ground, we will come out on the other side and we will build our new utopia. That's where we are, guys. That's where we are. We're beyond the progressives. Progressives weren't the ones that wanted all of the riots in the streets. Progressives were the ones who said, I don't want revolution. I want to take it step by step. Still, their idea is one state-run government. But they didn't want revolution. Postmodernists came in and said, that is the only way to tear it entirely apart and to be as vicious and ruthless as we can possibly be. Because Americans and the people in the West, they don't even know how oppressed they really are. It's important for us to know this so we can spot it and not play into it. I told you years ago, chaos is the operative word. It is going to be the word that that historians will write about this time period. And the people did not see the chaos that was being inflicted upon them, i.e. China, i.e. Russia. They did not see the chaos that was being inflicted on them, nor did they see the chaos that they were furthering and spreading themselves. We cannot be agents of chaos. We must, if we're going to preserve not just the country anymore, this is bigger than our country now. If we are going to preserve the Western way of life, we must again to use reason and logic and science and, dare I say, faith. Faith, at least in one another. All right, I want to tell you about our sponsor this half hour. It is American Financing. Owning a home has never been easier, and it continues to be an incredible investment. Whether you're buying your first home, your next home, or even an investment home, let American Financing customize the right loan program for you. And they'll give you free approval or pre-approval. They'll give it to you fast. They will let you know exactly how much home you can afford, and you can expect faster loan processing thanks to in-housing underwriting and decision-making. So, American Financing. Please, before this gets any worse, please, if you have an adjustable mortgage, again, please get a fixed mortgage, please. And American Financing can do that for you. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and over 1,800 Google reviews. They offer the e-sign so you can sign your documents in the comfort of your own home. They have no upfront fees. They have, you know, utilization of every loan in the industry. And they can customize a loan program and term to fit your financial needs. They're licensed in all 50 states. If you need a loan or you want to refi, please call American Financing, 800-906-2440. That's 800-906-2440. Or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck.
Welcome to the program. Let's go to Mike in Tennessee. Hello, Mike.
Beck, you get better every day where most talk show hosts get stale. You just love your analysis.
Thank you.
Let me develop a quick thought here. I know you're up against a hard break, but back in the 80s and 90s, there was a group that used to, if the IRS took someone's home, collectively pool their money and buy it back. And it pulled the teeth of the IRS. They lost that power. Now, I don't believe in any subsidies. 95% of the federal government should go away. I hate them. This, to me, is not political. This is business negotiation to tell China, if you think that you're going to mess with our farmers because of fairness, that we want to have equal tariffs, you know, let's have none of them. But if you're going to do 20%, we're going to do 20. We're going to fund them. And I'll tell you what, do it to our electronic industry. We're $20 trillion in debt. What's another trillion? Do it again to our farmers. We'll add $20 billion more.
Well,
this is a negotiating strategy, in my opinion.
Okay, well, Mike, it might be, and it's my hope that it is, but you're leaving out one important part, and that is, what's another billion to add to our debt? What's our trillion to add to our debt? Well, China is basically our bank. So, I mean, if they are our bank, it's one thing to say, hey, we've got the money. It doesn't matter. It's called FU money. That's what it's called. And you're right. That is the best way to negotiate. Unfortunately, we have to go get a loan from the bank we're telling FU to. And it doesn't always work out quite so well. Thanks for your thoughts.
Glenn Beck.
Russia currently appears more interested in hacking the U.S. electrical grid than interfering with our midterm elections. Oh, well, that's a relief. Last week, the Department of Homeland Security confirmed that Russian military intelligence has been hacking into the control rooms of power plants all across the U.S., and they've been doing it for the past year.
Shouldn't we have, I mean, shouldn't this been on TV a little bit? Oh, just a little bit.
So far, they appear to have stopped short of trying to take remote control of the plants, which they did in the Ukraine in 2015. But U.S. intelligence officials interviewed by the New York Times say that Homeland Security has, quote, understated the scope of the threat, end quote.
Yes, it's our power plants. That would, I mean,
President Trump was briefed Friday on U.S. cybersecurity efforts to protect the midterm election systems. Some believe Russian hackers may just be, you know, biding their time, waiting to attack the election systems closer to Election Day. Last week, Microsoft announced at a security conference that it had stopped an attack on congressional offices in late 2017. Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill says her office was one of the ones attacked unsuccessfully. She is on the Senate Armed Services Committee, and one official says Russian hackers may be trying to find a way into the classified military information that the Senate committee has access to. So far, Russian hacks into the electrical grid involve installing malware in the utility operating systems. According to the Department of Homeland Security, the Russians gained access to the grids by first hacking into the networks of utility contractors who have poor cybersecurity defenses. Now, I don't know about you, but the overall lack of alarm of what's happening with Russia is, to me, a little bit confusing. I mean, Washington occasionally gives it lip service, but are you seeing any concerted and coordinated effort to confront Russia on this one? I mean, the attitude is like, wow, this is bad. Whew, somebody should do something, huh? Yeah, you should be doing something. I'm telling you now, if this would have happened in the 1980s instead of 2018, where we don't know the difference between right and wrong, truth and fiction, I'm just saying, somebody might have said, well, ooh, I hit that button. There would probably be missiles in the air. Now, I don't want war, but I also, you know, don't want a world without electricity. Wasn't hacking the number one topic in conversation in Helsinki? What happened there? If Congress was half as concerned about Russian hacking as they were about collusion, America just might be on the way of being more prepared to safeguard our next two elections, not to mention keeping, you know, the lights and, hey, what do you say, the refrigeration on.
It's Monday, July 30th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
The Daily Mail, which is a paper out of London, is reporting now that TDS, do you know what TDS is? TDS. Oh, I have TDS.
Trump Derangement Syndrome?
Yes.
I was going to say, that can't be what he's referring
it
to.
It is TDS.
Okay.
Trump Derangement Syndrome. They are now reporting that doctors are saying this is a real thing. It's a real thing.
Oh, I think it's definitely a real thing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it definitely seems like it's a real thing.
Well, it's a real thing by choice. I think it's a real thing by choice. You weren't born with TDS.
No, I don't think you were born with it.
It seems like you have to decide, I'm going to live my life this way. You do. You do. Because there's no facts involved. Listen to this. Mm-hmm. Therapists across the United States say that ever since President Donald Trump took office, patients have been experiencing more anxiety, and it is affecting both Trump critics and supporters. Okay, well, that is not TDS. That is just, yeah, we're headed towards a civil war. We're not headed towards anything good here. And we all know it one way or another. This cannot last the way we're headed. It's just not going to last. Several therapists spoke to Canada's CBC News, saying that many of their patients have a fear about the country's future. Yeah. Welcome to it, Democrats. Hey, yeah, we've been here for a while. We were here in the second term of George W. Bush. So think how tired we are. Fear about the country's future, and if Trump will blow us all up. Okay, now do you actually have that fear?
That Trump will blow us all up?
Yeah.
No, I don't have the fear.
Not the way of, like, I'm going to destroy America. But, right. I mean, get us into a war, and all of a sudden the missiles are flying.
I have some worries over that. I mean, I know people who love Trump might think that that's, you know, there's a fear of that, I think, with every president. I mean, look, JFK almost did this, right? We were close with JFK. Right. Every president, we have a giant military with one person, generally speaking, in control of the biggest weapons in it. And so at any moment, any president could make a mistake or do something wrong that leads to something like
that. Let me give you, instead of some sort of conspiracy theorist that, you know, Donald Trump is just, he's just trigger happy. Well, let me show you a way that it could logically happen. Stu, what is China the most afraid of right now? What are they actually preparing for by 2020? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay, well, you actually do, but you haven't obsessed on it like probably I have, mm-hmm. because I have a condition.
You do. It's not TDS. It's something
it's
else.
Not. No, it is
something much more serious.
Okay, yes. So what are they doing? By 2020, they are going to have a social.
Oh, the social network thing. Yeah.
Social media scores.
Yeah. Social credit scores.
And what is that for?
I mean, to control their populace. Right?
Control the populace. Mm-hmm. It's exactly the thing that everybody saw with, if you ever watched Black Mirror, and mm-hmm. you saw that episode where you can't travel, you can't get a car, you can't get a job if your social media score is low. You are trapped. That's exactly what this is. And at the same time, they are building these massive facilities. And these massive facilities are education centers.
Well, we should point out, too, because I think if you happen to miss this show that we did a few weeks ago when we talked about this, it's not like somebody's rumored to start this. This is a policy that has already begun to be implemented in China. They are actually at it. So that means if you say something bad about the government, you would lower your social credit score. And if you do that enough, you would not be able to travel. You would not be able to get benefits from the government. You would not be able to get a job.
You can't have your children go to school.
Right. All sorts of... Basically, to keep everybody in line, and it's a way to monitor them.
And it is already being implemented, and it will be fully implemented by 2020. That's according to President Xi. So, I mean, it's a done deal. It's a done deal. Okay. So, they're afraid of their populace. Why are they afraid of their populace? They're afraid of their populace because they cannot stop growth. If they stop growth, people will starve. If their economy has a blip at all, people will starve, and they know revolution is around the corner. So they now have to get control of their people to know exactly where they are, give them all kinds of really bad punishments to make sure they all stay in line. They are afraid of revolution. What causes that a revolution? What causes that revolution is anything that hurts their economy. What hurts their economy? A trade war. We are playing with, and look, I hope this is a negotiation tactic. Now, Donald Trump has always said he believes in trade wars and that you can win trade wars.
And tariffs are great.
Mm-hmm. And they're all scientific and mathematical evidence, economic evidence shows that is not true. Tariffs are bad. Trade wars are bad. However, if he's just sticking his toe into the water and he's using this as a negotiation, and he knows how delicate the economy is over in China, you're going to be okay. If he backs out at the right time and we get what we need and we've compromised and everybody walks away feeling okay.
And there's some evidence that he might do that, right? With what the way he treated the Chinese phone company that was having issues. He went to bat for them. I mean, and because it was a big deal to China, and he advocated strongly to lift security recommendations from his own government to help their economy.
Correct. So, what happens if we don't start this trade war? Trade wars are always the last stop before real war. Okay, there's a whole series of events that happen. It starts with a crash, and then you start messing with the taxes, and you start redistribution. Then you start blaming it on people outside of the country. Then you start protectionist moves. Then you start trade wars. And if none of those things work, it's the next step is war. So could Donald Trump blow us all up in that way?
Yeah, that's not plausible. I mean, it's a bad way to put it, right? It's not right. Donald Trump blowing us up. Like, you could also say that, you know, this sort of more commonly referred to circumstance where Trump, you know, with his sort of tough talk, sets it not because he's necessarily going to start a war, but because some dictator decides, you know, like Kim Jong-un could have easily taken that the other way and said, well, screw you. If you're going to say it, you're going to threaten me like that, I'm going to blow up South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And it could have. It didn't. But, you know, you push yourself closer to those edges, and anything like that doesn't mean that that's Trump's fault per se, in that, you know, the person who fires the weapon is the one responsible mm-hmm. for it, right? Just like in any
right.
other
but
situation.
I'm trying to find a logical reason mm-hmm. why you could freak out right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
sure.
But those logical reasons are just as valid as it was when Barack Obama was cozying up in the Middle East through Benghazi, through the takedown of Syria, through the help to ISIS, and to the support of the Arab Spring. You know, I could make a case, and did every night, that that's a very dangerous thing. That could upset the balance in the Western world, mm-hmm. and it could cause all kinds of chaos in Europe, and it would cascade over here, and we're all screwed. That was really valid. It was not only plausible, it was possible, and much of it happened. but we're still here. The problem here is Trump derangement syndrome. People don't understand that it's the same thing that the right has been feeling. We felt exactly the way you do now under Barack Obama. The difference is you still have the mainstream media. You're already violent, and you still have the mainstream media batting for you. We didn't. We had no one standing for us. We had Fox and talk radio. That's it. And the mainstream media kept pounding us and wanting us, wishing and waiting for us to get violent. We never did. You still have the mainstream media, and you've already run to violence. And you're worried about all kinds of things that should be worried about by all of us. I don't want another war. And we're moving in the direction. But we've been moving in that direction for longer than Donald Trump has been in office. But you because there's no reason, because we're not using logic, because we're not using facts, you don't even know why you feel this way. You don't even understand that because you can't. Your reason centers shut down. It's a defense mechanism. When you're frightened, when you are freaking out, reason shuts down. Fight or flight. Well, we got to get everybody out of that because there are reasons to be concerned. But until we get out of this fight or flight, we'll never be able to see the real issues and be able to address them. Until people can stop saying, I've got to defend the president at all costs, from a group of people who say, I want to destroy him at all costs, we're not going to be able to solve what's really happening in Russia. And the threat is real. Sponsor of this half hour is Liberty Safe. It was July 23rd. Liberty Safe was invited by President Trump, along with Vice President Mike Pence and members of the administration, to participate in the Made in America product showcase at the White House. And they brought this big, beautiful Liberty Safe into the White House. And it's sitting there. Don't know which room that's in. But only 50 manufacturers from 50 states were invited to attend. And Liberty Safe was selected because of its commitment to American-made safes. Liberty Safe showcased its huge presidential 50 safe. Vice President Pence said he was really impressed with it and loved the beauty of it, et cetera, et cetera. I've never seen them in white, but I mean, it is the White House. Staff members suggested that all of the safes in the White House should be Liberty Safes. They should be a Liberty Safe in your home as well. If you haven't bought your Liberty Safe, now is the time to buy. Liberty is number one in preserving homeowners' guns and valuables. And the reason is really simple. They last a lifetime. They're made with the highest quality materials, and you can pass them on to your kids. I have Liberty Safes in my home. And they are easy to use. They are quick to access. When I need to grab a gun, and I've only done it once. When I need to grab a gun quickly, I can grab it quickly in a Liberty Safe. Go to libertysafe.com. Do what I do. Do what the White House did. Choose Liberty Safe. Liberty, offering 12 months interest-free on any purchase over $850. Liberty Safe. Simple, easy, secure, always protected. That's the Liberty way. Let's go to Bill in New York. Hello, Bill. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I'd like to talk about the people coming back from North Korea, the soldiers.
Yes, sir.
And you don't hear much about it on the news, like very little, even when they do talk about it.
Yeah.
And I think this is like a huge thing, you know. I mean, I'm a father of a veteran myself, you know, and I couldn't imagine my son being gone that long, or my brother, my sister, or maybe my father, and you just don't hear nothing about it at all.
Yeah, I would be interested in seeing those stories of the loved ones. I mean, we don't know yet. The remains have not been identified yet. And so we don't know who's come home yet. But I would be very interested in hearing the stories of those families who can now finally bury their father or their grandfather. And what that means. I think this was a very big thing that perhaps because it was accomplished with Donald Trump, that it's not getting the press that it deserves. It's a big deal.
Well, I remember when it actually happened. Remember when they sent the bodies home from Vietnam?
Yes.
I mean, it was huge. It was huge. It was on the news like forever.
Yeah. Well, Vietnam was, you know, a little closer as well. I mean, it wasn't North Korea. So, if you're lucky, it's your father. But for most people, it'll probably be their grandfather that has returned. Still, it's a very big deal, but it's a little more understandable because it's closer to Vietnam. Bill, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And thank you for, we'll keep your son in our prayers. Thank you for his service. There's a couple of things that we should address today. Medicare for all. Do you see what the cost is?
I mean, you know, everybody deserves, it's a human right. So I don't think there's any cost. It's a human right to get Medicare for all.
No, it's actually not. But anyway, it's the plan would cost $32.6 trillion.
Over how much time, though? That's a limited amount of time.
Yeah, 10 years.
Right. We say $32.6 trillion. Well, that's not the cost. It's much, much more than that. It depends on when you cut the time off. And usually we talk in 10-year periods with these things.
But
we should notice it's going to be a hell of a lot more than $32
trillion.
I was just
going to say, I've never seen a government program come in at or under cost.
No.
One thing we've been able to enjoy the past couple of years has been a great economy. You know, go back to the financial collapse of 2008, 2009. We've come a long way since then. And what we've been able to see here is a lot of people who have been able to get on the plus side of their home, get some equity going. And maybe you're thinking, this is the time I'm going to take my money out. Maybe this is the time you want to move, or maybe you want to do something a little bit different. Maybe you want to get into the housing market and buy something from renting. Whatever you want to do, realestateagentsitrust.com is the right place to go. Why? Because the people there are well-versed in all the transactions that you need, but they're also people that you can trust. There has to be a better way than just looking at some picture on a bench or finding someone you know from the gym. Someone who has really been screened for the best possible abilities when it comes to real estate transactions. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com does it for you. It's RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. Check it out.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, you can't always rely on the slippery slope argument. You know, hey, we can't do that because, well, no, that's not always true. But it is when you have dishonest people on the other side who are by name progressive. By name, they are slippery slope. We're going to do this one piece at a time because we will move from here, baby step, to here, another baby step, to here, another baby step. So when you're dealing with people who are not telling you the truth because their end goal is progression, the slippery slope is real. And the way to demonstrate that is in healthcare. Now, remember, the progressive ideal, the thing they've been trying to do for 100 years that they will all deny, is that we have wanted 100% everyone covered under one universal American health program. So there is no private insurance. There are no private doctors. It's just all government. It's like the VA for everybody. Oh, that's going to be good. Okay, that's what they've wanted. They've wanted it from the beginning. And you'll see it in honest reporting. They'll say, you know, the dream of the Democratic Party for the last 100 years. It was not Obamacare. That was just a half measure. And it was designed to collapse. It was a Trojan horse. What was the guy's name at the Tides Foundation, Stu? You remember him?
I don't remember his name, but I've always loved that clip because he's so proud of it. He's like, look, you know, people are saying this is a Trojan horse for single payer. It's not a Trojan horse. It's right there. I'm telling you. He's saying, I'm telling you, it is a path to single payer.
Right.
That was the designer, one of the designers of Obamacare.
Right. And the design was to collapse. It won't be able to last, so it will collapse, and that will cause people to say, take the next step forward, universal health care, single payer, Medicaid, Medicare for all.
And look, this goes back long before Obamacare. It goes back to, you know, Lyndon Johnson, right? Like the idea you can't get everybody covered under a single payer, but what if we do just the most needy? And what about just old people? And what about, you know, and you start taking out different sections of it and you still picking away. Now, Obamacare was just people who weren't on Medicaid, but couldn't afford insurance. Now we got those people and they just slowly have chipped away until, you know, basically we're at the point now where most people have some portion of their health covered by the government, a good chunk of them at least.
And it's always promised that it's going to be better than what we have.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
it never is.
It never is. You go try to get prescriptions. I mean, Canadians drive across the border all the time to buy prescription medicine. Why? Because they can't get it in Canada. Nobody will cover it in Canada. The government will decide what medication you can take. And if you're in a family, like I'm in family, my daughter who has cerebral palsy and epilepsy, my gosh, the medication alone is enough to bankrupt you. And you think she's going to be able to get the different kinds of medicines that she needs under Obamacare? Or I'm sorry, under universal health care with Medicare? No, it's already gotten worse because of Obamacare. So they've run the numbers now, and these are the numbers, you know, and Bernie Sanders looks at them and says, they're pretty close to my numbers. $32.6 trillion over 10 years. Stu, how much do we raise in taxes? We just had a record tax year for America. We gathered more taxes than in any other year in history. How much was it?
Let's see. U.S. government total revenue estimated to be $3.422 trillion.
Okay, so this is $3.26 trillion over 10 years. So we've just raised the most amount of money that America has ever taxed her people. It's never raised more money than this. 34.2
for the year.
3.422
is estimated for 2019.
Okay. So that's what we're getting. This program will be paid for by taxes. Now, we're already $1 trillion in debt every year now. We can't afford $1 trillion of what we're spending. So we're just putting that on the tab.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to add $3.26 trillion at the minimum. This is what it is going in.
Per year.
Per year. So that means to pay for this program, because they'll say, we'll just pay for it in taxes. That's what they're saying. These people are going to have to pay more in taxes. Yes, double the taxes. We're only raising 3.4 now. If you need to raise another 3.2, you have to double the taxes. And what happens when you raise taxes? Your unemployment numbers go up. Your business goes down, which means your tax revenue goes down. It doesn't work that way.
Now, you're not. If you double taxes, you're not going to double revenue.
No,
I mean,
no,
you
no.
may increase it, but you're not going to double it.
Stu, remember we did that thing? Oh, man, this was way back in the CNN days. Well, there is a number, and I think it's, I want to say it's 17.8, but I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
There is a percentage that no matter, we've looked at tax revenue from the beginning of the IRS to today. And we've had taxes that were, you know, 20%, and we've had taxes that were 90%. What was the average that no matter what the tax code said, what is the average that we collected? What is it now?
You're speaking of Hauser's Law.
Hauser's Law is the proposition in the United States that federal tax revenues since World War II have always been approximately equal to 19.5% of GDP, regardless of wide fluctuations in the marginal tax rate. Historically, since the end of World War II, federal tax receipts as a percentage of GDP averaged 17.9% with a range of 14.4 to 20.9. So, yeah, you were off by 1/10 of a point.
Yeah.
That law was a little bit different than the actual results. But the point is, it stayed really consistent.
Yeah. So the real solution to see how much money we actually have and can spend is to just take our GDP and times it by, what, 19% and see what we have. What do we have? That's how much money you have. And you'll always have that money. It is a slave to GDP. I mean, the most efficient way to do income tax is just to have a flat tax of 19.5 or whatever it is. 20%. 20% income tax. Everybody pays it. There's no exceptions until you get down to a very low number. But it's 20% of what you have. That's the most effective because there's the least amount of fraud. There's no loopholes for anybody. And that's what you're going to collect anyway. No matter if you say, I'm going to charge 95% for the rich. No, you're really not. What, there were no rich? There were no rich under FDR? What happened to all his money? Did he pay all of his money? Oh, no, he didn't. He was still rich. How? Because there's always ways to hide and move money for the rich. It's just not going to happen. It's just not going to work. And it kills me when you see people who don't want to use logic at all on taxes or on spending. $32.6 trillion.
It's completely ridiculous. I mean, at this point, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is just, it's just socialist porn, right?
It is.
If you believe in that sort of philosophy, it's not, it doesn't need to be true. It doesn't need to be any real backup to it. It's just, it's exciting to think about the possibility that what if we took everyone's money and spent it all on things that we want? I'm watching The Handmaid's Tale right now, which, you know, first of all, is really, really well done. I mean, you know, it's a Hulu series.
Can you enjoy it?
You have to look past the idea that it is essentially feminist porn, right? It is like, it's fear porn for feminists.
Okay.
Like, here's the craziest thing. The reason why it's so popular, besides it being really well done, but it's super dark. The idea that this is a cultural phenomenon, I mean, every other scene is a sexual assault, and it's really super terrible, right? Horrible things happening throughout. If you don't know the concept of it, basically, somehow a civil war happened in the United States, and a religious fundamentalist group basically took over. I don't know if it's the whole United States or a big chunk of it. And
I think what happened was there was some sort of an outbreak. Wasn't there?
Yeah, there was a decrease in
fertility
rate. So they had to basically take all the women who were fertile and make them just baby machines, right? So the elites are constantly assaulting the baby machines who are subservient. And the idea, of course, the reason why it's popular right now is, you know, I can see this happening. Oh my gosh, Donald Trump wants to do this. This is what he's trying to plan. Like, that's what,
crazy.
But that's why it
appeals, right? I know.
And this is, there's a long history of this, right? Like, you could go to Atlas Shrugged is essentially libertarian fear porn, right? Same thing with Overton Window in a way, right? Mm-hmm. The book that you wrote. You go to Waterworld is essentially environmentalist fear porn, right? All of these, Red Dawn, right? There was an example of it then. Elysium, right? Is if you are afraid of capitalism, that you believe that maybe, I don't know, maybe all the rich people will build a giant space satellite and they'll all live up there and we'll all suffer. You know, I mean, that's essentially what it is. I mean, leave out the fact that in Handmaid's Tale, it's really amazing because here you have a bunch of people saying, oh my gosh, you know what, Donald Trump might do this. When they ignore the fact that that society basically exists in several countries on Earth, which are almost never criticized by the left. And by the way, one of them in particular is a communist country. The same thing that essentially Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is rooting for the road to is essentially The Handmaid's Tale, right? I mean, you're telling me North Korea, Iran is another good example of this, where you have a society that runs somewhat similarly
to what they're actually showing on The Handmaid's Tale, and it's occurring right now.
See, this is what I tried to say about a half an hour ago, that you don't even know what you're really afraid of. You are afraid of all these things, like Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen in America. It's not going to happen.
No.
Now, could fascism happen in America? Yes. Could communism happen in America? Yes. Could we have civil war in America? Yes. Could we have an Islamic war and a possible takeover from the Islamic world? Unlikely, but yes, we could. So we have all these things to worry about, all these things to, and nobody's actually talking about the real issues. Instead, you'll run to Handmaiden's Tale and say, see, this is the Trump America. No, it's not the Trump America. That's not the Trump America. And it's not the Obama America. Let's deal with the facts. Aren't the facts scary enough? Why do we have to go to these shows and watch this dystopian future when this one's pretty frightening in and of itself? Let's make sure that those things don't happen by dealing with the issues at hand. How do we have a civil war? How do we have a government that all of a sudden loses control and a bad government steps in? Well, I'll tell you, an easy path, lose your power. Oh, who's doing that? Is that in the news? Yeah, Russia hacking our power stations. What do you say? We work on that one. So how real do you think the power thing is, Stu, with Russia?
I mean, I think there's a constant effort by Russia to gain pathways to influence our country. And then obviously, I think the election is part of that as well. But like, I think they all are always looking for leverage. So that doesn't mean that they're going to. I don't know that they're like, where Al Qaeda is an, you know, back in the day would be an active. Mm-hmm. They were actively trying to mm-hmm. do these things to shut down our country and hurt us. Where Russia, I think, is looking for leverage, for the ability to be able to do it. Like, they like the idea that they can get it. I don't know that Russia is, you know, I mean, they could.
They don't want to necessarily starve us to death.
Exactly. Yeah. That's not necessarily their end goal, but they're always looking for ways to leverage us. And that may have been what they were doing with the election. But I think that is their, it's at least part of the goal. And they know that they have it in case they need it.
Well, I mean, Putin said the next war is going to be fought with ones and zeros and not missiles. I mean, what happens to you and your family if this happens? You run to the grocery store? Let me tell you about our sponsor this half hour. It is My Patriot Supply. I mean, when there's an emergency, and I mean a snow emergency, that's when people run to the grocery stores, and the grocery stores are packed or empty. If you don't have an emergency food supply, it's really time to do so. Here's what makes this special this week, makes it really, really simple. Each person in your household should have a 2-week emergency food supply from My Patriot Supply. Those food kits now are only $67. So take action now. Individual 2-week breakfast, lunch and dinner food supply, $67. Call 800-200-7163. That's 1-800-200-7163. Or you can go to my special website, preparewithglenn.com. Preparewithglenn.com. $67 for 2 weeks of food per person. It's only from My Patriot Supply. And only this week, 800-200-7163. 800-200-7163. Or preparewithglenn.com. 98. We have to talk next hour. We have to talk about Mission Impossible. This is, it's getting 98 in Rotten Tomatoes. 98.
That's insane. For an action movie, too?
It's 2 hours and like 47 minutes.
Oh, my. Oh, jeez.
I know.
2:47.
My wife told me that as we were walking in. I said, how long is this? She said, 2:49. I was like, oh, my gosh. It is worth every second. We finished it and we were like, oh, if we had time, we'd go again. It's like
really?
Yeah, it really was. It was like, it was just such a great ride that it's like, you know, if you're on Space Mountain and you get to the end and you're like, go again.
Yeah.
without the line. Without the line.
Okay.
It's really, really good. Back in a second.
Glenn Beck.
You know, I just think that social media is maybe making us a lot more dumb. Do you think? There's currently a hashtag being pushed by the BBC that is out right now. Hashtag no more boys and girls. This is coming from one of the largest news outlets in the world, which is also publicly funded. They just ran an experiment where they dress up boys in girl clothing and girls in boy clothing, and then they sit back and watch as volunteer adults go to play with them. Now, there's some high-level science here. I don't know if you know this, but you probably have no idea what the results are going to be. What happens when these adults sit down with a girl dressed as a boy and a boy dressed as a girl? Let's go straight to the video.
I think she liked that pink dolly the best.
If I were to tell you actually that Sophie is Edward, does that change anything?
I maybe thought, oh, this is a little girl, so I have to give her little girl things.
No way. Shut up. A little, like, 18-month-old, dressed as a girl, introduced as Sophie, and the woman gives her, like, little pink elephant to play with. Shut up. Who would have ever seen that coming? I mean, who would have ever thought that girls and boys might like different things? Well, they don't, apparently. It's just us. I don't even know where to start on this one. First of all, I know he couldn't have been the only one disturbed to see these poor little kids dressed up in clothes they're obviously not used to, and then having strangers come in and repeatedly call them by some other name. I mean, this is honestly borderline child abuse, isn't it? Second of all, speaking of child abuse, what this video is attempting to do is to train parents to coerce their kids into not accepting who they are. Letting little boys be little boys and little girls be little girls is not, as the BBC put it, conforming to a stereotype. That's called nature. Oh, man, these people piss me off. Have they ever been around children before? I mean, I'm sorry. You could be my sister. She grew up in the 60s and she's a hippie. She claims not to be, but she's a hippie. And she said she moves out to Wyoming. Okay, who moves out to Wyoming except hippies? So, I mean, you know, from the Pacific Northwest, I just want to get away from it all. Get away from it all. It's you know, it's 1980 Seattle. There is no all in Seattle in 1980. I want to get away from it all. So she goes and gets away from it all. And she decides when she's pregnant, she has a boy, and she's not going to let them play with guns. So, God forbid. Bid Uncle Glenn comes and gives them, you know, a toy gun or a truck. No, no, no. She gave up on that after she found her boys playing in the backyard, you know, with sticks, playing cowboys, Indians, army. It's boys. That's what they do. It's nature. Now, the BBC claims to be advocating empowerment, but I think they're advocating child abuse. Every generation in history of mankind has understood that males and females are different. Does that make one superior over the other? No. But we need each other. We're different. But if they can make you doubt reality, they can eventually make you believe in anything. And that is what this is truly all about.
It's Monday, July 30th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
I don't know about you. I don't know any reason why I want to run to the movie theater and just escape. I can't think of a single reason that makes you just want to turn off reality.
It's hard to be involved in it, isn't it?
It really is. You know? It really is.
Because, of course, I'm sure this is the same with you. Every time you go do anything else, everyone wants to talk to you about the news.
No, I don't really have any friends, so I don't.
Okay, no one wants to talk to you about anything. But when I go do things, you know, they know you work at a show that talks about the news all the time, so they bring it up, just like you bring up their dentistry or whatever job they have, right?
Right.
Hey, how the teeth?
How's the teeth thing working?
How's the enamel? I mean, is big enamel day or what's?
What is it that you do really? Because everybody, I just had my teeth cleaned and I went to the dentist and I only saw you for about 10 seconds. Somebody else did the x-ray. Somebody else cleaned. You just walked in, poked my gums with something and went, "You're looking good." What do you do?
It's kind of like if I hosted the show and at the end you came in and go, "Yep, you're right, Stu. All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow."
And it's still the Glenn Beck program.
How does this work? I don't understand.
Right.
That's a good point.
The dentists have a great scam going on, but we digress.
You didn't think we'd uncover anything today. Well, we have.
We have. Uh-huh. Yeah, we're doing our homework.
They're in the back with the nitrous. That's where I'd be.
Oh, I felt like such a wimp. I went to the doctor and when I was a kid, I had a doctor with the old style. I mean, this is like, you have to go back to old movies to even see these. With the old style syringe that was in the metal, mm-hmm. Metal body on it.
Sure.
And the two big rings on the end. So he stuck a needle in my gums and then let go and was like, "Oh, I forgot something." And so the needle and the thing is just like,
what?
Boing, 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 and snapped off. And so he had to go dig it out of my mouth. So anybody comes near me with a dentist.
What alley were you in that this doctor?
No, I know.
I bet you do know.
Yeah.
He left a needle hanging from your gums and then it broke.
Oh, yeah, it was really.
I hope you got 10% off.
We still went to the dentist. It was in those days where like, we're not going to see. Oh, it's just Bob.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Bob should not be a dentist, Mom and Dad. No. Anyway, so I'm sitting there and I'm trying to be really, really cool. And finally, the nurse is like, "Would you like some nitrous?" And I'm like, "Yes, please. Yes, please." It is. I felt like such a weenie.
Oh,
you're cleaning your teeth. And
I am 100% on the nitrous bandwagon. This has been a huge change in my life. Recently, and a lot of people come on the radio to talk about positive changes in their life. This is a positive change in my life.
Is it? Okay.
I'm doing a lot more nitrous. It's great.
Right.
No, every time I go to the dentist for any reason, I actually just really enjoy it.
I might stop by this afternoon just to make an appointment.
Exactly.
But I need nitrous to do it.
I know. Someone say that sounds like a drug problem.
Right.
It does.
It is.
It is.
But it's under a doctor's supervision.
Exactly. And here's the thing. I'm one of the people who, I can't believe we're talking about this now. I had one bad experience at the dentist a long time ago.
Tell me about it.
Where just something happened and it hit a nerve and it really hurt really badly. So now, every time I go to the dentist, all I think about is every single move in my mouth is going to do, it's going to recreate that reaction.
Every time they come to me with anything in my mouth, I'm like, "You're going to break that off in my gums."
Exactly.
Right. It's irrational.
Yes,
let it go.
Completely irrational. So I get nitrous every time I go to the dentist for any reason. And, 99% of the time it's, cleaning. Luckily, I've been to the dentist a lot, so I haven't had any tooth problems that are of any serious note. But even for a normal cleaning, I am absolutely on board. I don't wait until something happens. I do it right off the bat. In fact, I called ahead and I said, "You know what? Just to let you know, I know you never do this for anyone else." And they give me the little wuss treatment too. They're like, "Wait, this is just a cleaning, right?" I go, "Yes, I do." And you know what? You know this isn't covered by insurance. "Yes, I do." Now bring out the drugs. That's what I say. And they roll the tank and they put me under, and it's fantastic.
So why is nitrous
not more popular? I've asked the same question.
Right. Why?
And also I've asked, I may have done some research on how do I get a tank in my home?
And you might have,
done that.
You might have.
And so here's the thing. Here's the issue.
How am I going to take it home?
Because I was thinking about it one day.
Right.
We had a group outing, a friend's birthday party this weekend. And we went out, and as adults tend to do, not included in this room, had a few drinks and maybe a couple too many drinks on Friday night.
Right.
Saturday, I woke up and felt like hell.
Right.
And that's not a normal occurrence for me at this point in my life, but it does occasionally happen. And I got, this is what's so great about nitrous. You feel just as good as the greatest moment of that night drinking. In a half an hour,
you're
completely normal driving home. It's insane. And now, I think that's also the downside of it, though. Because the only, you know, there's probably multiple downsides of it. Don't call me if you're some scientist. But the one of the downsides of it is, you know, 20 minutes after you pull this giant apparatus off your face,
right,
you're no longer in, you're right, no longer anywhere near the great moments, right, of nitrous.
Right.
Which, by the way, this broadcast brought to you by the makers of nitrous.
Right.
Yeah, sure. Today. But it's one of those things where it just fades so fast. It's not a particularly viable recreational drug. I have looked into this in that when you escalate usage, apparently, unlike all other drugs, you need more and more to get the same sort of level, and it becomes a little addictive. But the side effects, apparently not that dramatic. And that's why it's a popular...
Now, I don't think you're thinking this through clearly enough.
Well, I am on nitrous, so I may not be thinking clearly.
So you were saying, you know, we went out. I mean, it might knock down some of the, I don't know. You know how everybody looks better when you're drunk?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Everybody looks better. I don't think wearing a little cup over your nose and having a hose and carrying around a tank in the back like you're an old man, you know, is really that. What's happening with you?
Well, first of all, this would not necessarily affect home usage. Let's be honest. Let's tell the truth. Let's tell the truth here. But I have thought of this. And again, what year is it?
Yes.
Right? It's 2018. You're telling me we can't solve the face mask problem here? There's got to be a solution to that.
Right. Maybe you could just inject it.
What if I walk around with a tank and a needle all day?
Right.
I mean, that would make this all the media stuff feel so much better.
I really wouldn't mind a life on nitrous.
It's pretty good.
It's
pretty good.
And what is really remarkable and kind of sad is that it does go away the minute you stop. You turn it off and you're like, no, don't.
Well, it fades slowly.
Eh.
And then you're a little bit I feel like I'm a little bit like cloudy.
Mm.
Like I wouldn't necessarily want to come to a show.
Yeah, I'm not going to operate a nuclear power plant, but I'll do this.
Yeah, I guess we just blurted out. Yeah. Gosh, you guys aren't making any sense. What's the difference?
It's not like we're doing nuclear energy here.
Right. I mean, here's the thing. Most people, now sure, there's a television network involved, but put that aside for a moment.
Yes.
Most people hearing us right now are on the radio. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are taking in this show through audio only. They wouldn't be able to necessarily see a face mask.
No, but it might change the sound.
Well, no, it's going over your nose.
So, Stu, tell me about the debt problem.
Put it over your nose and try to do the debt problem joke. See?
Okay. Yeah, you wouldn't notice.
You wouldn't. I mean,
but you would hear. I mean, when I'm thinking, you would just hear. There'd be a lot of those times on the air too, where we would both just be staring into space, and one of us would go, "Hey, wait a minute, what were we talking about?"
I'll remind you, this break started with something different. I brought up dentist, and that's how we got here.
I know.
So you're thinking it's going to be more coherent? I mean, I can't be less. There's a good chance we improve. Again, I
should try
better
that
on nitrous.
We should try it for science sake to see if the show is better if we run that nitrous. Oh my gosh, I don't think that. I think that would be dangerous.
That
would be dangerous.
We would need a chaperone. Because I think you're right. Someone has to have the power of just turning the mics off at some point. There has to be somebody in control. It could go really awry.
What? We should do this. This always legitimizes things. We should do this for charity.
Yes!
And raise money. How long?
Yeah.
How many minutes before the mic has to be shut off?
Oh, my God. That would be... Because I have the strangest thoughts when I'm in the dentist chair.
I'm just... Yuppie.
Seriously, you know what I think about almost every time? I'm like, why isn't nitrous more popular? I want to start a business. I just want to get in this line of work.
Only thing that is thought to me was it makes your car go fast and it makes you feel this way. All right.
You had a point, by the way.
I don't remember what
it
was.
We should get back to that.
We'll try to remember what it is. We'll take the masks off here in a minute. All right. I want to tell you about real estate agents I trust. Tanya and I were trying to sell our house a few years ago, and we were up in Connecticut, And by the way, have you seen the housing prices in Connecticut? Holy cow. Sorry, is this it's the nitrous.
Is it the nitrous? No, why?
Bad.
Really?
I mean, yeah. Bad.
It's weird. I mean, I looked recently at my houses up north that we owned around the time of the Great Recession. We owned two houses, moved a couple times. Mm-hmm. But both of those houses, according to like Zillow, have not recovered to the place that we sold them.
Yeah, me too.
Which
me too.
Is crazy.
We sold ours in 2008, I think, mm-hmm. and still hasn't recovered, you know. Anyway,
amazing.
So we had a really hard time selling the house, and we needed a real estate agent that could really get the job done. Well, we've done a lot of research and thinking since then, because it can't be that hard. I mean, who do you hire? Who do you hire? How do you know who to hire that's going to sell your house on time for the most amount of money? Who has the right marketing plan? Who do you do? What do you do? You just trust an ad that you've seen? We have great agents that are in this long term. They are the best in your area. They have the best marketing plan. They have the most amount of experience, and their track record is the best. Okay? They will help you every step of the way to get your house sold on time and for the most amount of money. You'll find them at realestateagentsitrust.com. You want to sell your home? realestateagentsitrust.com. Go there now. This is a disturbing conversation we've just stumbled into here with
the good new business line, Glenn. Come on.
I don't think this sounds wrong.
You got internet, you got TV, you got radio, you got books,
and
you got
nitrous.
I mean, I'm willing to head up this department.
So how come this isn't a bigger problem? I mean, this is much better than opioids.
Because there's not the downside of it. That's the big thing. You wake up the next, you're legitimately an hour later completely
It's got to like burn your brain out or something.
It doesn't. It's not according to the Cracked magazine.
Cracked magazine.
Yeah, Cracked did a big expose on this to talk about the long-term effects. And
so it's not illegal.
It's not illegal, no. You can use it.
So why isn't it being used by, I mean, seriously, why would you do opioids?
We're 20 minutes into this, probably time for the disclaimer that you should not actually do nitrous like this.
But right.
There is an issue where some people get to, it's not addictive per se, but it is one of those things where if you really like the feeling.
Oh, it's mentally addictive.
And yeah, it's one of those things that if you get into that pattern, you can start to want to do so much. But there's stories of people who want to do 100, 200, 300 hits of it a day. And that's how it's easily acquirable, is my understanding.
See, I would just
from
want one.
A lot of research.
That would start in the morning when I got up and ended when I went to sleep.
See, I'm thinking like, I go to the movie. I go to see Tom Cruise's movie, right? I'm going to see Mission Impossible. I bring along my nitrous tank. I wheel it down the aisle. I sit on the end. I pop it on and watch a nice movie. It'll be great. And then I get up and I drive home. I mean, this is an enjoyable evening.
I am serious. Why is this not done by people?
I think it is done by people, but
why would you do crack? Why would you do, you know, what is the drug, the popular drug that makes your teeth rot and your
meth?
Yeah, meth. Mm-hmm. Why would you do any of that?
Why not go to nitrous? You can order it easily online in form.
No, I'm serious. I mean, I'm not, you know, this isn't healthy conversation coming from an alcoholic, but. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going to meth, wouldn't you think, well, this is probably better?
First of all, I could stop my nitrous anytime.
Anytime.
I just don't want to.
Turn the tank off.
I'm
in full control.
But no, I think it's because it's so short. I think that's the issue.
Wesley in Ohio. Hello, Wesley. You're on the Glenn Beck program.
Glenn, privileged to talk with you. I talked to your screener about... The nitrous in a car is different than the food grade nitrous that you're breathing.
Good thing I haven't tried to take a hit out of a car.
It's found in the spray whipped cream in the can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That same nitrous is in that can. That's what propels and causes the expansion of the cream. So if you hold the can upright and you ingest it, breathe in that.
Yeah, no, those are called, what is
air.
It called? Whippets.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's called whippets.
And that's
whippets.
Not a good thing.
No, it's
it's the same nitrous as what you're talking about.
But and again, what's the difference between the nitrous there and the nitrous in the car? We've only had 30
even
seconds.
Even though I'm into the car business, I do not know the difference. But I wouldn't take any nitrous from a car.
No. Well, no, I wouldn't either. I wouldn't either. Even if you were a doctor and said it was okay, I wouldn't do that, but I appreciate it. All right. Thanks, Wesley. Back in just a second. So I went to see the Tom Cruise movie this weekend. It is. I'm a big fan of Tom Cruise. I'm a big fan of Mission Impossible series. But I think each of the Mission Impossibles are getting better as they go. It's like the opposite of what, you know, sequels used to be.
It does seem that way. Yeah. I didn't like the early ones that much. Yeah. And the last couple have been really good, I thought.
I did. But when you watch them, because the family, we watched over the last, 4 weeks, we'd watch one Mission Impossible building up to this. Mm-hmm. And so we've seen all of them and they're getting better. This one is the best by far. It is just a rocket ride the entire time. And what makes this more impressive is the fact that he did all of his own stunts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he learned how to fly a helicopter in a corkscrew dive, which is one of the hardest things to do. He learned it in like 3 months. That's really him flying. That's really him climbing the rope. That's really him on the motorcycle, 120 miles an hour with oncoming traffic in Paris. And they were filming it and they had some safety device on the bike and everything else. And they couldn't get the shot. And Tom said, just take it off. Just let me do it. And they're like, I don't think so. Just take it off. And they took it off. So that's it. Every stunt you see, he's doing.
He's not doing. There's no.
Not that I know of. This is from what I have heard.
Okay.
Everything that you see his face on, there's no superimposing. But you see him on the rock, on the cliff face. You see him, falling out of airplanes.
And he hurt it. He broke his ankle, right? I don't know.
Because at one point,
he had to do the jumping out of the airplane scene 106 times.
Oh, my God.
He had to jump from the plane 106 times to get the shot right.
Oh, you got to be
kidding. Is that incredible?
Yeah.
Wow. That kind of attention to detail, that's why he makes 25 or 30 million a movie.
Nice. I'm telling you, though.
It's incredible.
And you know what? I think he is. You know, we all really liked Tom Cruise, and then he jumped on Oprah's couch, and everybody's like, he's a freak.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's officially put that away.
It feels that way, yeah.
You know, he's just that likable Tom Cruise guy again, you know? And he just seems like a good guy. And then, he's what, 56, 57?
56. Mm-hmm.
Look at him.
Mm-hmm.
Look at him. He's a sexy man.
He's still a sexy man.
Yeah, he is. He is.
That's not the nitrous talking. He's still a sexy.
I mean, you watch him run in some of the scenes. He'll be running on jumping on rooftops. That's where he broke his ankle. And you'll see him running and jumping off of these rooftops in London. And he's running like he's 20. I mean, the guy just has power. It's amazing.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
And his career is amazing. We were just talking about some of the movies he's done in the past. Almost all of them are super enjoyable. Really great. I mean,
there's very few exceptions.
All the way back.
Eyes Wide Shut.
Eyes Wide Shut and Vanilla Sky would be right
off.
Those are probably exceptions. I didn't see either of them, but I hear they're not.
Yeah, they were
not
bad.
Great. Not good. I mean, Interview with a Vampire.
No, that wasn't good.
Mm.
But you think about Top Gun, Minority Report.
Great.
Oh, yeah.
Valkyrie.
Valkyrie's awesome. Really good.
That's one of those movies that if it's on, I have to watch it.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
So great.
You have to watch it.
Yeah.
It's a rule. But I mean, American Made came out last year, was really good.
Really good.
It wasn't one of those movies
that tons of people saw, but it was really good.
It was really good. It's a true story.
Yeah.
True story.
About an American drug dealer?
CIA. That's how the CIA was trying to, use Manuel Noriega and the drug lords to, I don't even remember what.
Yeah. It was really good, though.
But it was really good.
Edge of Tomorrow.
That was good.
Is that Die, Rinse, Repeat or whatever that is?
Live, Die, Repeat.
Live, Die, Repeat.
They changed the name after the theater run for some reason. It's weird.
That's how I know it. What is it?
It was Edge of Tomorrow initially. Mm-hmm. At the movie theater, I went to see Edge of Tomorrow. And then Live, Die, Repeat is on demand. It's strange.
I don't think I've ever seen that happen.
I think they released it internationally, maybe as Live, Die, Repeat.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And then their big thought was the reason why it didn't do, and it did $100 million, but for a Tom Cruise movie, that's not all that much.
And they think that just people didn't know what the heck it was about. Like, they thought that the Edge of Tomorrow just didn't say anything.
Yeah, it didn't do all that. I mean, it did well, but not fantastic.
It was good.
And I thought it was really good.
I really liked it.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a couple. I mean, Rock of Ages was kind of a disaster. But, I mean,
sort of the Def Leppard story.
Didn't see that.
Right?
Yeah.
Plus, that was on Broadway for a long time.
Yeah.
That? He was in that?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Wow.
That just doesn't seem like a good decision. No. But there's been a lot of big movies in the Tom Cruise career. I don't know if we're breaking news by saying that, but he's had a decent run. Oh, God. I mean, you got to go back that far. There's
great movie.
You
know,
he's born
on the 4th of July, of course.
He is really...
A Few Good Men, The Firm. These are Jerry Maguire.
Oh, one of my all-time favorites. Jeez. I love Jerry Maguire.
I mean, there's a lot there. War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
He's probably our generation... Who would he be?
He's got to be the biggest movie star, right? I mean, there was a time where, like, you had Tom Hanks was in that discussion, right? Like, Will Smith, I mean, Denzel Washington. There's a certain amount of people in that discussion. I don't know if there's anybody
Tom Hanks was that guy, and he still is a huge movie star, but he's not still going.
Right.
You know, he's still not making those blockbuster hits.
Well, was The Post big? The Post was pretty big, right?
Not commercially, and it wasn't a
Tom Hanks vehicle.
Meryl Streep more than anything else, which was probably the mistake they made. Yeah. Let's be honest about it. Throw that junk in the middle of a movie,
Love it when your Meryl Streep hatred comes to the surface. Yeah. I love it.
I mean, it didn't make money in the theater. I mean, $81 million on a $50 million budget. Wow. So that's
it was a good movie, though. Huh. It really was a good movie.
Yeah, they just put Meryl Streep in it, so it's not going to do that well.
But is it slanted? Is it like...
No, I thought it was unbelievably... it's one of those movies that you're looking at the people like Meryl Streep, and you're like, do you understand the words that are coming out of your mouth?
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. It's like, you know, at one point, they're sitting around talking about, you know, we gave Jack Kennedy a pass, and he's the guy who started all this. Why? He used us. We shouldn't be friends with a president. We should be objective the whole time. Wow. And as they're saying it, you're like, yes, yeah. Hello.
Wow.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Because I've avoided it for that reason. I thought, that's...
No, it's actually... I didn't think so. I thought it was pretty good.
This is a big thing going around Twitter right now. Apparently, I don't know, true? That Tom Cruise is older...
Yes.
Than Wilford Brimley was in Cocoon?
Yes.
He's currently older than Wilford Brimley was in Cocoon?
No.
Yeah, that went
That's
away.
That's impossible.
It's not. It's
That's
not.
Impossible.
It's not.
I mean, he's jumping off
that
roofs.
That is amazing.
Jumping out of planes.
That's not the same guy.
Well, I mean,
Wilford Brimley and Tom Cruise.
No.
Completely different guys at 56.
And the Kelly McGillis pictures that have been tossed around. Oh. I mean, I feel bad.
Oh, I do too. Because, it's
incredible.
Not a flattering shot of her. begin with.
Would you like to make that a little more accurate?
Because if you haven't seen this.
That's a very kind statement.
It's a 1980s, what was it, 86? And 2018, side back to, you know, four pictures total. The two pictures at the top are the original. It's actually one picture, but the original picture of Cruise and Kelly McGillis in Top Gun. And then they show both of them today. Cruise looks identical to what he looked like.
He's only a little thicker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he's not fat.
A little more muscular.
He's just, he's just thickened out some.
And then she looks like, you know,
completely
everybody
different.
Else, I guess, would after a long run. You know,
she looks like it's been, and you don't mean run, like...
No, it's 40 years
it
or
looks
so.
Like she's been, you know.
She's aged like we
have over 36 years.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
It's not a knock on her as much as it's a compliment to him, I think.
Well, look at everybody in that cast. Have you seen Val Kilmer?
Oh, yeah. Well, Val's had his issues.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking up pictures of Val Kilmer, and I'm feeling good about me.
Wow.
I heard Val has... Slimmed back down a little bit.
I've heard that as well.
Because he was going after the... And I think he's in it. He's in the new Top Gun.
Is he?
I think so. Because I heard initially he wasn't, but then I saw that he was. So I'm not sure which is accurate.
Everybody's excited for the new Top Gun.
I love Top Gun. You didn't like Top Gun?
It was okay.
Well, when you're a guy.
Are you a communist?
Right.
How could you not have liked Top Gun?
No, I like Ronald Reagan.
Okay.
I like Ronald Reagan.
I mean, Top Gun, exactly. That's what a man would watch, Top Gun, right?
And then there's Glenn.
That's right.
That's true. Wait a minute. Hold it. Just a second.
You know what I'm saying?
I think I kind of get what I'm.
I think you're trying to say I'm not a man.
Oh yeah, no, it was pretty obvious. I guess then. In retrospect, I wasn't really. There's no veil there. Okay, got it.
Get out. Get out. Both of you, get out.
Oh, cool. I get to leave.
No punishment. You stay.
Pat Gray Unleashed, by the way, coming up in just moments on the Blaze Radio and TV Network. Listen and view.
Simply Safe Home Security. Fantastic protection for you and your family. Well, Simply Safe has now just been valued at $1 billion. I mean, it's crazy. I know these guys. I've known them for such a long time. Five guys just working together. That's when I first started working with
them. Did they offer you an investment opportunity?
No.
At any point?
No, they didn't.
You should have pressed on that one a little.
I should have. Because I knew they were going to be successful. Because these guys are just, they were helping people out so they wouldn't get burglarized. And they had this idea. And it was, a better mousetrap. And now.
Now they're doing it in front of everybody's eyes. And
it's $1 billion. And
you didn't invest.
Here with nothing. Anyway, Simply Safe. They protect now over 2 million people. And here's what makes them great. Comprehensive protection for your home, round-the-clock professional monitoring and police dispatch. You get protection against intruders, fires, leaks, busted pipes, all of it. Simply Safe. It works during power outages, downed Wi-Fi. Even if you're, the burglar comes in and tries to smash your keypad, it's still calling police. The system is easy to use, incredibly intuitive, takes just a couple of minutes to set it up, and you own it. Oh, plus no contracts and no hidden fees. The 24/7 monitoring is only $14.99 a month. That's it. So order yours now. Go online and find out how easy it is to protect your home with Simply Safe. Go to simplysafebeck.com. That's simplysafebeck.com. Get 10% off your home security system right now at simplysafebeck.com.
Well, we have to. We have to have our thoughts and prayers with a woman who is remaining nameless in the story because of the tragedy that has befallen her. She was she's 24 years old. She just got married to a 26-year-old guy, and they had been married less than a year. And she started to think, there's something going on. There's something's not right here. She said, my husband was distant all of a sudden. He wasn't around. There was little conversation. He started to disappear. He said he was having to stay late at work, and then he had to travel away from work, yada, yada, yada. And so she called investigators and some private eyes, and they saw the physical signs. They said, she got them. There's changes in dress, coming home later and later. When guys take their cell phones everywhere with them and they leave it face down, the investigator said, these are all the warning signs. He could be messing around. So they went out and they did surveillance on her or on him. And she said, I put a lot of guilt on myself. I couldn't understand, what I was hearing and seeing. I mean, what had happened? And then they returned with video footage. And when she saw who the woman was, she said, well, it was a total fog of disbelief. Apparently, her husband had been a frequent visitor to dating websites offering trysts, and they had uncovered that he had registered with several dating websites. And
she kind of suspected that, though.
Yeah. And and so they followed him to one of these trysts, and they had the videotape of him at 26 making it with a mother of two and a grandmother of four. She's 72 years old.
That probably was surprising.
I would.
Not the way you necessarily.
Are you an ageist?
No, I just think,
Why was that busy surprising? What, old people can't enjoy and be at the prime of their...
They certainly can.
Yes.
They certainly can.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I just think that maybe it was surprising. It's just the distance of the drive, you know? Just to get all the way out there, you know, it's...
And probably the distance of the sag, too, you know?
Potentially.
That was maybe a little shocking.
It's a little... I mean, look... Well, you know, we've all, there's many movies now that come out about this. Like, what's the one, Last Vegas? I think they've been trying to make Last Vegas like every 3 months for the past several years.
I've never even heard of it.
Oh, really? It's like every aging celebrity goes to Vegas together.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's like
yeah.
one of those type of movies.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, look, there's documentary evidence here that you live do some really fun things.
Well, apparently this isn't the only 72-year-old woman that he has been with, so...
So he's got a sexual preference, Glenn.
Right.
And you know what? I don't know if you're criticizing his preference,
and
I hope not.
It bodes well for her future. You know, a lot of women, as they get older, they're like, my husband's going to find some younger, but nope, not him.
This is the reverse
the
situation.
The older you get, the more chance you have of him being turned on by you, apparently. So...
Longevity, the secret of life. Yeah, a long-lasting relationship there
right.
being built. It's wonderful. Right.
She said she hasn't divorced him yet. She said, I want to quote this one. She said, it's a difficult time at the moment. It can be, but it can be great to get rid of somebody so toxic in your life. So I think she's made the decision to dump him.
She's leaning a direction.
She's leaning that direction, mm-hmm. you know, when you're called toxic. You know, but hey, so if you're 72, check out the websites because, you know, there just might be some 26-year-old hard body that is interested.
Glenn Beck.
Mercury.